Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday to commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:19 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is September 5th. Well, there's quite a bit to talk about today, and I thought I would kick off with Asia, and I'll be looking at Japan and its relative performance, and certainly it's being aided by the devaluation of the currency. But there's a lot of currency pairs that are worth looking at right now because the dollar is breaking higher, and not just on the dollar index. Then China, where Country Garden came in with its bond coupon payment in the twilight hours of the available window. So default has been forestalled, at least for now. But they've got a ton of debt, and they have, I think I saw a statistic, it was something in the order of 5 times more active property projects than the last big one that was looking like it was going to go bust a couple of years ago, Evergrande. And then we have oil prices that are popping on the upside because that Saudi Arabia and Russia have decided that they're going to stretch out the cut to production until, or at least for the next 3 months. Then bond yields are still pushing higher because the dollar is also pushing higher, so we'll certainly look at that. So there's certainly a lot to think about here. And then, of course, you also have the fact that the UK is under quite a bit of duress, and the bankruptcy of the Birmingham City Council, the second city in the country, that's a major deal. But I think it's also a victim of wokeness, and these suits that are being brought by labor unions and basically preying on the definition of what workers are. And these are, I think, are and the inability, or at least it seems like the inability of city officials to be able to defend the way that they have defined what a job description entails. So certainly there's a lot of moving parts right now. So let's crack on and take a look at Japan. The TOPIX index is breaking on the upside. And this is the resumption of a medium-term uptrend. And I think the big picture here is quite clear. The more back history we look at, then the more it looks like a base formation completion and a first step above the base that has now yielded to a break on the upside. And it's quite likely to at least get up to the 2500 point level, and then perhaps more than that. Now, the market peaked after a phenomenally large acceleration in the latter part of 1989, and it's been an awfully long time since Japan has really been among the best performing markets. So this is really quite a phenomenal advance. One thing that I think is particularly interesting is that it's companies like Mitsubishi Heavy that are really accelerating on the upside. Now, of course, Mitsubishi Heavy has got a partnership arrangement to build the F-35 plane. So they're going to, I guess its outperformance is representative of Japan rearming itself without actually saying so. And then we also have a really strong performance from Kobe Steel. And this is bucking the trend of performance from steel companies internationally. So there has to be a good reason for that as well. And of course, the fact that Japan might be rearming is, I think, part of that. So you have an impending meeting between Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin in Vladivostok. And it's quite likely they're going to discuss many things. Well, we know, for example, that North Korea has intercontinental ballistic missiles. They've been firing them for a couple of months already, or at least they started doing it in July. It's not like they're doing it every day. And then it's also a part of a tit-for-tat, I guess, trend that's been going on between Russia and NATO. NATO needs armaments, and NATO doesn't really have them, so they've gone off to South Korea, and South Korea has massive stockpiles because the Korean War never really finished. Then, of course, so does North Korea. They still have all their manufacturing capacity for conventional armaments. So Russia's over there buying some of theirs. So this is basically a continuation of the Korean War, just happens to be in Ukraine. But of course, the fact that North Korea has ICBMs is obviously something that is going to focus the attention of people in Tokyo and in Seoul. And then the lesson from Ukraine is that if you do have an unpredictable neighbor, well, then having nuclear weapons is really not a bad idea. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we're going to see Japan become a nuclear power, or South Korea doing the same thing. But there, I don't think it's going to be clearly announced. And they may have perhaps an idea that they're going to have a similar type of strategy to the one that's followed by Israel. I think most people are convinced that Israel has a nuclear capability, even though they've never confirmed it. And I think that considering the performance of shares that would be linked to Japan's rearmament, it's quite likely that Japan probably has nuclear weapons too, and is just not saying anything about it. Then let's contrast that with the performance that we're seeing on the Hang Seng. So it was down, it was up 2% yesterday, down 2% today, and not really bouncing here. So there's still a lot of doubt about just how committed the Chinese administration is. Every day we see that they make a statement that they're providing some new form of assistance, the market steadies a little. And then every day that there's a negative piece of economic data, then it pulls back a little. But the H-share index got up to test the region of the 200-day moving average. That's where the sequence of lower rally highs has been, and it's looking like it's beginning to fail. And that was on the PMI figure being lower than expected. Now it's still marginally in positive territory, so manufacturing is still expanding, but not nearly as quickly as people were anticipating. So then let's also just take a look at Country Garden, because I think that its performance is certainly worth paying attention to, and it is hovering here around the one Hong Kong dollar level, and it has been steadying. So they did get the money together to make that coupon payment, but I don't think anyone is really thinking about a major recovery going on in here. Now, when we look around the wider Asian region, the underperformance that we're seeing in China is taking a toll on several other countries. So the New Zealand market is starting to roll over, and it's right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So now it's really important that if it's going to find support, it would want to be getting along with it. And this was a downward dynamic in here today, but it's also being fueled by, I think, some capital flight, because the currency is also down in a rather dynamic manner. And this is equally true of Australia. So the Australian dollar was also in negative territory in here today. Now, one challenge that several countries have is that they have either shorter mortgage terms or floating rate mortgages, and the price of property in Australia is exceptionally high. So, with higher interest rates overall, then that is going to put a certainly a source of pressure for the property market. And I think then we saw this incredible infusion of interest in New Zealand properties during the pandemic, and that's also likely to be unsustainable, particularly as interest rates start to go back up again. Now, when we think about the ASX 200, well, It does have this medium-term inverted head and shoulders pattern, and that would generally be consistent with a break on the upside. But if that is going to be the case, it's definitely got to hold the 7,000 level. But we've definitely had a lot of volatility. We've got both big upper dynamics and downward dynamics inside these ranges. So I think until it sustains the move up through 7,500, then I think we can't really confirm that it's back in a demand-dominated environment. Now, the Indian market was a bit steadier in here today, and I think that there's certainly more interest coming through for India as a counterfoil to China's weakness, and they're certainly attempting to sell themselves as the champion of emerging markets and the potential that they can garner some of that outward investment from China into the manufacturing sector. But the Indian rupee has been quite weak. And it's on the cusp of breaking, or the dollar at least is on the cusp of breaking out to a new high. So on a currency adjusted basis, that's potentially going to be problematic. And of course, even with oil prices that are discounted oil prices that India is getting, oil is still quite steady. And it got up to test the $90 area in here today, but did not quite hold all of the move. Now, of course, we've had a very impressive rebound in oil prices over the last 2 weeks, so we may get some pause of consolidation. And we're also pretty much in the region of the peaks from back in January, but above them. And the downward bias has been broken. So oil prices have plenty of room in which to consolidate and still be very much on a recovery trajectory. There's also a lot of moving parts in the oil market. On the one hand, you have the efforts by Russia and Saudi Arabia to restrict supply. And I think that is, on the one hand, it's certainly helping to support their budgets, and the Saudi Arabia needs prices to be somewhere in the region of about $81 or $82 to balance their budget because they're selling lower volumes. At the beginning of this year, the estimated break even was probably around 73, but of course they were selling more volume, so the lower volumes they sell, the more of it, at the higher the price that they need to get in order to balance their budget. But then Saudi Arabia is also looking at selling $50 billion worth of Saudi Aramco shares. So that is a very sizable chunk of capital that they're trying to get in. Now, they've certainly got a lot of interest in building infrastructure projects, in providing funds for industrialization on the peninsula. But on top of that, they are also very much aware that Chinese demand has probably peaked. Now, there's still going to be demand from the petrochemical industry, but as transportation fuel, China's demand for oil has probably peaked because of the surge in demand for electric vehicles. So that, I think, is perhaps the most significant factor in why you have this concerted effort by OPEC Plus to try and curtail supply. They want to ensure prices stay higher for longer. But of course, the problem is that that is putting upward pressure on inflation. And when we look at bond yields all over Europe and into North America, then we can definitely see that there's continued upward pressure. So gilt yields are up to 4.52% and firming in the region of the peak from late last year. And until we see a very clear downward dynamic and break in the sequence of higher reaction lows, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And so then property developers in the UK are rolling over. So Persimmon, having declined very significantly all the way through 21, 22, and into 23, has begun to offer at least some evidence of support around the 1000 P level, but it does now look like it's rolling over, and property prices are certainly rolling over. And that is clearly in response to higher inflation, higher interest rates. But then, of course, there is also the push side, that if there is you have obviously got Birmingham City Council going bust being a major headline, and then 10% of councils being in a very similar position. And that is going to necessitate that the payments that are being suggested, they're going to necessitate that there's going to be fewer services provided. Well, if people are experiencing lower standards of living, they're going to demand higher wages. And that is the kind of wage price spiral that can contribute to a significant issue. And of course, that will forestall the ability of the Bank of England to cut interest rates. Now, the economic weakness as a result of property prices coming down, then that might stop them from raising rates. But they're going to have to be very alert, and anything that pushes up wage demand growth isn't something that they can sit by and idly ignore. So I think there's certainly a lot to play for in the domestic part of the UK economy, and the pound has been unwinding its short-term over spot condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Now, the FTSE 100, which is much more internationally focused, has been steady in the region of the 1000-day moving average. But there's clearly a sequence of lower rally highs this year, and it's pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average right now. So it absolutely needs to hold that 72-40 area and the region of the lows from 3 weeks ago. If it fails there, then we should be prepared for a significant period of underperformance. But as an international index, I think there is certainly the potential that it's not going to stay, or it's not going to go down on its own. Now, when we look at what's going on in the USA, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had a downside Q reversal on Thursday, and now is following through on the downside. So, it's not a big move. It's certainly not dynamic in nature, and it's an index that can move 1,000 points with relative ease. But it does look like some weaker action is more likely than not. Then the Nasdaq 100 is still quite steady, so a little weaker on Friday, but after the Labor Day holiday, the index is closing out the day in just mildly positive territory. So that is then contributing to a continued really strong performance by those mega cap companies relative to the wider market. And it is now pushing back up through the 24% level of the entire market. And as long as that remains the case, as long as these mega cap companies are continuing to outperform, then I think investors aren't going to be particularly worried really about continued upward trend of rising interest rates. But 10-year yields were up in here today, and the dollar was really quite steady. So the 10-year yield had an upside Q reversal, I should say another upside Q reversal on Friday, and then follow through on the upside in here today. And the dollar index has broken its downtrend. Now it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It's up today in a fairly dynamic manner. And when we look at more of those currency pairs, the Singapore dollar is right at the upper side of the range that's been forming for the last year. Or sorry, the US dollar is at the upper side of its range against the Singapore dollar, and it is strengthening here. And then the Canadian dollar is also weakening against the US dollar. This is, I think, really quite clear support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And then the Thai baht has also got, or the dollar has clear breakout characteristics against it. So we're seeing that it's not simply dollar strength against the euro or the pound, but that it's firming against the majority of currencies. And that's going to take a toll on precious metals. So gold prices have pulled back by $16 today and rolling over a little now. So now it absolutely needs to hold the $1,900 area, or we're going to see another downward leg in here. And silver, having outperformed on the upside, has started to roll over as well. So we had a rather large reversal, our intraday reversal yesterday, and follow through in here today. So this is holding out the prospect of some additional volatility, and silver has been up and down over the course of the last couple of years in some very significant moves. Now, I think the core services ex housing CPI is really the one that the Federal Reserve is paying attention to. And I think the most important thing is that it's holding the move above 4%. And it popped on the upside when it was last reported. And from the decade between 2010 and 2020, it went sideways. And it went sideways at a relatively depressed level and was hovering around 2% for a long time. Now it's established above 4%, and it hasn't been above 4% since the early 1990s. So that is, of course, holding out the prospect that we're looking at a more inflationary trend overall. And the last time it did this, when it went from around the 2% level up to over 4% and ranged there, was in the middle of the 1960s. And subsequently, inflation popped on the upside again after that. So that, I think, is one of the reasons why bond yields are still high. It's one of the primary rationales for thinking that the Federal Reserve isn't going to have a lot of choice. They'll have to continue raising rates, and they don't have a lot to stop them when unemployment is still at a very low ebb. And so far, stocks are not really paying much attention to it. And then you have large companies that are looking at IPOing and bringing the IPO market back to life in an environment where interest rates are the highest they've been in years, and inflation is still an unknown quantity as to when it's going to end. And then let's just take a look at the IPO ETF, because it's quite likely to start getting new members. There might be Arm will that be IPOing reasonably soon. Instacart has filed for an IPO as well. Now, when we think about Instacart, I honestly I just cannot wrap my head around how people are still willing to pay for food to be delivered. Half of Uber's business is now at food deliveries, so people are still paying for it. But I think the reality is that this kind of activity, where people would rather pay someone to deliver their food, potentially receive it cold, and pay the premium on top of the order fee, these are vestiges of the pandemic that are unlikely to survive when people have less money to throw around. So I think it's a good time for Instacart to IPO. Now, of course, Instacart is more about deliveries from supermarkets. Now, you might argue that people's lives are so busy that they don't have time to go to the supermarket, but they seem to have time to do just about everything else. And how much are people willing to pay for that? So I think these are important questions, and before we really have to get answers, it's probably a very good time for Instacart to probably come to the market. That does not mean, however, that it's going to come in at a valuation that is attractive enough to buy. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.